Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello, folks, and welcome to your second podcast of the day. It is still sort of day six of Roland Garros 2022, and it is still sort of our birthday. It is 24 minutes past midnight, so very technically it is the day after our birthday.
Which is normally when we celebrate these things.
Well, exactly, David.
So we can have 2 days.
Exactly.
Excellent.
It's happy birthday to us.
Yeah.
Yes. We've
got to follow a Mary Carrillo show. We should have done it the other way around, shouldn't we? The Mary Carrillo Lush show first, followed by Mary. But anyway, we shall do our very best. And Carlos Alcaraz has certainly helped us this evening, hasn't he? David, you covered that match from on site. You were jigging between that match and Cameron Norrie against Karen Khachanov over on the Simon Mathieu court. Carlos Alcaraz having beaten Sebastian Corda in three straight sets. Matt and I were watching it here from TP Towers Paris edition. And as we sat down to start watching the match, Matt said, it's time for Alcaraz to make a statement.
Right.
And I think he made that statement tonight.
Oh, yeah. 100%. And this is a guy who'd beaten him on the surface. First match of Alcaraz's clay court season in Monte Carlo. Scrappy match from what I can gather. I didn't watch all of it, but that's how it came across. That's what I'd heard. This wasn't scrappy from either player. Sebastian Corda came out and he brought it, and he connects with a ball so sweetly. And he was going for it, and he comes into the net all the time, and he's knocking off volleys, and he's a huge guy. You know, it's not easy to beat this guy. And Alcaraz beat him 6-4, 6-4, 6-2. And at the end, he hit a shot. I'm not sure I've seen a shot like he finished it with, because it was kind of hard. It was like a Nadal-Djokovic hybrid, because he slid into the ball like Djokovic, the way he does, front on, to kind of parry the ball. And Djokovic often hits passing shots like that, but it had Nadal-like whip power on it at the same time. I just don't know how you do that.
On the backhand, on his weaker wing.
Yeah.
If there is such a thing.
He was so explosive tonight and just exhilarating. And it's because I was doing this split screen thing with the Cameron Norrie match, the difference between the two matches. And that's, I'm not trying to disrespect Cameron Norrie. He's a really good player. And Khachanov, who won that match, played really, really well. But I'm telling you, the levels of difference that Alcaraz achieved tonight were just a reminder of Madrid.
He put on a show tonight, didn't he? I think despite the fact that was a pretty straightforward straight sets win, the people that had that night match ticket...
Thank you.
...will leave feeling like they got their money's worth. They got a show tonight. Carlos Alcaraz put on a show.
He did, yeah. I really feel like he's put that Albert Ramos-Vinolas performance behind him. You know, that was him still working his way into the tournament. He's saved the match point and he's in it now. And this was the Alcaraz that we saw in Madrid. It was the Alcaraz we saw in Miami. It was top level Alcaraz. He just jumped on Corda, breaking him in the third game of the match with a huge forehand winner. and he did all the things that we've become accustomed to seeing him do. And the French commentators that we had were just loving him. They were gushing over him. Fabrice Santoro was one of them, talking about how much he loves his audacity.
Gushing in French is somehow even more gushing. It was, c'est pas vrai, c'est pas vrai. It was very gushy.
And even the words pas de rafter were mentioned at one point as he kept coming to the net.
Pat, c'est comme pas de rafter, demi-finaliste ici. It was really fun. Somehow the flair of the French laid over the imagery of Carlos Alcaraz was...
That says something, doesn't it? The fact that the French ex-players are purring over him. Because, they like a bit of that.
Santoro purring over his variety.
Yeah.
You know, not just purring. You know, you had Guy Forget purring about his speed and his power and his explosiveness. But then Fabrice Santoro, every time he forayed to the net, just sounded like he was having a When Harry Met Sally moment. He was enjoying it so much. I've lost my co-podcaster, so I'll just press on. There was a really funny moment that Matt picked up on in the on-court post-match interview with Mats Wilander. Tell us about it, Matt.
Yes, this was a great moment. Mats Wilander asked him directly, you served and volleyed in the 5-4 game in the second set. Talk us through that, you know, because it was a standout moment, you know, seeing Alcaraz serve volley at such a crucial stage. And Alcaraz began his answer by saying, well, on the first one, Juan Carlos, and then sort of caught himself and suddenly realized that he was about to, I think, reveal some blatant on-court coaching, which isn't allowed, and changed tune mid-sentence, and then started talking about how Juan Carlos Ferreira always wants him to be aggressive in the key moments.
He was either going to give away blatant on-court coaching, which I think he was about to do, absolutely, or he was going to completely give away his game plan to every opponent as to what he does in every pressure moment.
Yeah.
Neither one ideal.
There was also the final question from Mats Wilander was about, again, Juan Carlos. I mean, he was the champion here in 2003. He's a big deal, particularly at this tournament. I think in Wimbledon, he'd be considered pretty niche, Juan Carlos Ferrero. But here, he's a big deal. The fact that he's looming over the Carlos Alcaraz matches is a feature for these French crowds, and very much for us as well. And Mats Wilander asked him, when was the last time Juan Carlos beat you? And it was a really revealing little moment, because suddenly he looked like a naive little boy, didn't he? Because he didn't want to... clearly...
Because he lied.
Clearly Juan Carlos Ferrero hasn't beaten Carlos Alcaraz since he was like... Well, I don't know. They met when he was 13, didn't he? But... I'm not sure he's ever beaten him. 15 was he when they...
I tell you, that's a good question. I mean, first of all, Alcaraz said, look, he's in great shape. And actually, he is. He's ripped.
But it was such a sweet little...
He didn't want to embarrass his dad.
He didn't want to embarrass his dad. Yeah. And throughout it, Juan Carlos beamed on parentally, the way that he does, with these shining eyes. And it was so lovely.
It was lovely. And... Yeah, I think it might not be that long ago. And the reason I say that is the strides that Alcaraz has taken in the last year. I'm afraid I'm going to have to do another Nadal comparison, because Nadal came out for one match that I saw in his early career and he'd suddenly changed his physique completely. And he just had become a man and he could... But game-wise, he was still quite similar to what he was before. He didn't change his game in over the course of the years that dramatically. He had this way of playing, and it just caused Roger Federer and loads of other players nightmares. And then he decided, I want to do more than that, and I want to add to my game. Alcaraz, I think, in terms of a difference in a player's game in the space of 12 months, I can't think of anybody more dramatic making that level of dramatic improvement in 12 months. I can't think of anybody ever. And so, you know, if you go back 2-3 years ago, when he's 15-16, I mean, remember when Pat Cash said he played a young Nadal? I could imagine Ferrero 2-3 years ago was beating Alcaraz.
Mm. Yep. But he did say...
He did say 2 months ago.
He said two months ago, and then he changed it to a year.
That was a lie. And I think a year ago was probably a lie as well. But a really, really... The very definition of a white lie.
Yeah.
Next up...
Such a lovely lie.
It's so lovely. Next up for Alcaraz, it is Karen Khachanov, who we mentioned that you were keeping very much... an eye on, maybe even more of an eye at points. He beat Cameron Norrie in 4 sets tonight. Big win. Big win for Karen Khachanov, who loves the clay, doesn't he? Spends a lot of time in Spain, training on clay, grew up for large periods on clay. I think he's going to have a horrible time against Carlos Alcaraz because his thing is hitting the ball big.
Yeah.
And he's going to... I think his nose is going to be out of joint because he's not going to be the biggest hitter on the court.
He's going to play somebody who does everything that he does just better. Running fast, hitting balls, touch, everything. And I mean, Khachanov was so tight at the end of his win over Norrie. I mean, he did a good job. He played well today. He deserved that win. But he tightened up so much. He had 2 breaks serve. He lost one of them. And he was, it's so interesting watching a guy who's as experienced as that, who's won that many matches, look, you know, being quite open with everybody about how nervous he is in the tight moments. But I just can't see that being particularly close.
I don't understand Karen Khachanov as a tennis player, but there is one thing that we do know about him, and that is he is incredibly consistent at Roland Garros. I think he's reached the second week now 5 times.
Whereas for Alcaraz, this is his first time in the second week of Roland Garros.
Wow. Something tells me not the last.
Yeah. It's hard to see, isn't it? It is very hard to see any kind of Khachanov challenge, but...
You might keep...
That's why you play the matches.
Might keep a set or two close, but I'd be surprised.
Just finally, one on Sebastian Korda. Have we seen enough of him to try and make completely unreliable predictions about his career? We were making Thomas Burdick comparisons this evening. Is that unfair? I see it. Or maybe that's a massive compliment.
I think it's unfair to Thomas Burdick at the moment because Thomas Burdick beat Rafael Nadal, Roger Federer, and Novak Djokovic several times.
What I mean is most people are talking about, maybe before Alcaraz became, to quote Daniil Medvedev, the famous Carlos Alcaraz, but most people were talking about Sebastian Korda as a future Grand Slam champion. Now, Thomas Burdick didn't win a Grand Slam, so I suppose that's what I mean. Mm. I think if you offered Sebastian Korda Thomas Burdick's career right now, he'd say no thank you.
I would agree. I think he's hugely ambitious. And I think he's... The similarity is the ball striking, that purity
smooth,
of strike.
Yeah.
It's lovely to watch. And actually the movement, probably, because Korda's maybe not quite as heavily built as Burdick, but he might end up being as heavily built, because obviously he's a young man at this point. I think he might be better, end up being better mentally than Burdick, because I think
Burdick accumulated baggage, didn't
he did.
Mentally.
And I also... I may be wrong, but I kind of sensed that he was more satisfied. He achieved a lot. And again, Korda will be doing really well if he achieves as much as Burdick did. And I think maybe, and I'm guilty of this too, we damn Burdick would faint praise occasionally. But I think he wasn't prepared to go the extra last little bit. He could have got a bit more out of himself, I think, even more. I do
a slam?
I think there might... I mean, it's the era, isn't it? The era is a nightmare. Mm. But there were just a few moments where I thought, the classic, has the guy got fangs? Mm. That's
has Korda got fangs?
Yeah, I would say so. I'm expecting him to.
Jury's out, I think. I don't think we know yet.
No, we don't, but I'm expecting him to. Yeah. I think he's got the ambition to.
I hope so, because I like him a lot, and his game is so smooth. I really hope so, but I did just waver on it a bit tonight. But then, I don't know, Alcaraz is so imposing. He sucks all the air. He doesn't suck it out of the room. He just occupies it all, doesn't he? I don't know how you try and impose yourself when Carlos Alcaraz is on the other end of the court, unless you're Nadal or Djokovic and you've got 20-plus slams
Alcaraz
on the court with you.
Changes the equation for everybody. He's made the lens through which we look at all the others different.
Let's stay with the men's side of things, seeing as we've done Alcaraz and we've done Khachanov. Let's go to our other two contenders, because, of course, they're all in the same half of this draw, because Nadal and Djokovic both made statements of their own today. We were expecting Novak Djokovic to make a statement against Aliash Bedene. I didn't see all of it. I was dipping in and out of it. It was on the screen in the area of the press room that we're in. It looked exactly the match that we were all expecting to see. Does anyone have anything further to add?
No. I mean, Aliash Bedene plays a bit like Novak Djokovic, just several levels lower. And he's a very good tennis player, but he poses very little threat. And that's what the scoreboard told us.
It'll be Diego Schwartzman next for Novak Djokovic. Fittingly, on our 10th anniversary, we made a really, really shit Grigor Dimitrov prediction. Or you did, David.
Yeah, it's very nice of you.
I was going to say, please do not lump me in that
it's
one.
It's what the people have come here for, David.
I mean,
David and I were sitting, you were out watching Anisimova Mukova, Matt, and David and I were sat in the press room, and David looks over to me in horror as we've both just glanced at the Dimitrov-Schwartzman score. He's two sets and a breakdown. David said, did I say that Dimitrov stuff on air yesterday?
And Catherine said, no, but we'll bring it up tonight.
And here we are, David.
Yeah.
He won his opening two rounds in double quick fashion. He was looking great.
Is there ever going to be a time in my life when Grigor Dimitrov doesn't win one match and make me start thinking something's changed?
Nope.
No.
No.
I didn't see the match. I just saw the scoreboard ticking over, and I didn't expect that at all. So, yes, I thought on the 10th anniversary I might change my fortunes. I listened to episode one this morning when I was predicting Serena Williams to win the French Open, and she lost in the first round. So it's all entirely in keeping.
I don't think we've actually said what David's prediction was for Dimitrov.
The prediction actually just assumed that he would beat Diego Schwartzman.
It did, yeah.
Today. Yeah. The prediction was Dimitrov could trouble Djokovic.
Yeah, but I think he could have done.
No mention of Diego
Such
Schwartzman.
Such a perfect prediction, because no one could prove you wrong.
Had he got through?
Can Diego Schwartzman trouble Novak Djokovic?
I'd be
we all want
surprised.
To say yes, don't we? We all want to Diego well, generally.
He'll play a good match.
Yeah,
they've played six times. Djokovic has won them all. I'm pretty sure there'll be like a close set in there. Schwartzman will make it close. I just always think that when Schwartzman plays Djokovic, he is clinging on to his serve.
Mm.
You know, it's Mary Carello's first rule: you have to hold your serve. And Schwartzman struggles with that generally, but he makes up for it normally on return because he's so good there. But Djokovic's return is the best I've ever seen. He's just constantly putting Schwartzman under pressure. And it feels like even if Schwartzman gets ahead, well, Djokovic will just break him back. it seems like such a tricky matchup for Schwartzman.
Well, one of the things that I've enjoyed this week in being back in a commentary box, because I haven't been in one for a long, long time, is listening to the Davis Cup captain, Leon Smith, and people who have played the sport and coached the sport, and asking them, what do you do when you play a player that is clearly levels above you in rankings terms and in achievements, and what do you do as a coach to send your player out there to have a chance? What do you do? You know, and Leon Smith made a really interesting analysis for me of how there's no point in sending your player out to try to be something that they're not, to try to throw some game plan in that they've never done before.
Monfils, US Open semi-final style.
He said you have to tell them what you've seen in the stats about what the opponent is likely to do on certain points and how often they go which way with a serve, etc., to equip them. And then you've got to tell them they've got to play their game and they've got to play it the best that they possibly can and try to keep the score close. And then maybe there'll be a couple of points here and there where the player misses the first serve and gives you a little opening, and maybe you can put them under a bit of pressure. And it's all so incremental. It's there's no point in doing much more than that, really, and that's your best chance. But it's really just how tough it is, even from a coach's perspective, really came through to me.
And yet, you know, madness is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. Mm. You know, so many times we have bemoaned players for going into a match and just playing their game because it hasn't worked 8 times in the past, 9 times in the past. Mm. Why is it going to work now? But I get that, you know, if you do try and do something totally different as well, you're kind of setting yourself up also to get thrashed potentially. It's why the best players are the best players, you know.
Yeah.
Rafael Nadal today had his outing on Suzan Longlin. You know, we thought, well, I'm using the collective we generously here because I've just taken you to task on your Dimitrov prediction, David. But some people thought Bartek van der Zandschulp might be a bit tricky for Rafael Nadal today. And that Longlin might be a bit tricky for Rafael Nadal today. Turns out absolutely nothing was tricky for Rafael Nadal today.
I was reminded after making that Longlin remark that he's never actually lost a match on Longlin, ever.
He's never lost a match outside Chatrier.
No.
Mm.
So...
And we
not having the best week, am I?
We finished our chat with Mary earlier off air, and she said Nadal's omelette is open, right? And that's very much a reference that you need to have listened to the Mary pod to understand. So if you don't understand that, go and listen to that pod now. But basically, he's got a chance, right, Nadal, at this tournament. And of course, we said yes because it's Nadal at Roland Garros, but. It does feel like his first 3 matches here, he's won very convincingly. Today was the best of the lot, certainly for the first 2.5 sets. I think the best I've seen Nadal play, probably since Acapulco, really. I didn't think he was amazing always in Indian Wells. Anyway, the idea of him winning suddenly seems not obvious because Djokovic and Alcaraz, but it feels like we're maybe thinking more about weather forecasts and scheduling and level rather than the foot, you know, because look, the foot hasn't been a problem for 3
matches.
There
wasn't any question about the foot in his post-match
which
press.
Was the first time,
first
I think.
Time.
And look, we know that it's when he gets pushed and it's when he gets tested that the foot does become an issue. But I think we go back a week and Nadal was far less certain about how he was going to pull up. He's had a pretty perfect 3 rounds, I think.
Timing of match as well is another factor.
That's what I mean with scheduling.
Yeah, but if he gets that nightmare, she's made it so clear he doesn't want it.
Is fascinating. So we're probably jumping the gun on our preview here, but let's just allow ourselves to go there for a moment because both Nadal and Djokovic have been asked about this today and both of them have been drawn on it. They've laid their cards on the table. The cards were pretty easy to guess, but the fact that they fronted up about them is interesting. Nadal asked in press how he feels about night sessions. And he said he does not agree with night sessions in principle on clay. I mean, he said, obviously, they don't suit me personally, but he just doesn't think they should be played full stop.
I think the conditions are too heavy, the balls are too slow. And actually, I think he's worried about injuries, night sessions on clay, because the player's having to force the ball so much.
And Djokovic on a TV interview, I think... with Tennis Channel, but I'm not quite sure. I know Nadal visited the Tennis Channel studio. Actually, no, it must have been on French TV because it was Mikhail Lodzsa that asked him. Yeah, it was French TV. He was asked about whether he would like the potential quarterfinal that he might end up playing against 13-time champion Rafael Nadal, whether he would like that to be a night session. And Djokovic said, let's just say that Nadal and I would be asking for different scheduling on that day.
Quite like that.
And Matt and I were talking about this earlier, and Nadal's going to ask for day, Djokovic is going to ask for night. Prime Video will ask for night, France Télévisions will ask for day, and I'm sure other TV stations will, you know, have various requests as well. I think it's going to be pretty much equal weight on either side, and ultimately it's going to be a judgment call from the tournament, and it's going to be fascinating. Does anybody want to make a call about where that match will be? With apologies to Diego Schwartzman and Felix Auger-Aliassime, whose matches
make any difference which they're on one side of the draw or other in terms of preparation time for the next one?
No, I don't think so. I think the other consideration would be what the other men's quarterfinal would be that day, which we would expect it to be Alcaraz versus Zverev, is a good night session match as well.
I think it'll be day, and I think Alcaraz Zverev will be night.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with that.
I think the fact there's so much talk about the conditions, it would be the more... I don't want to say controversial, but it would be a bit controversial to put it at night.
They're not going to let that match finish at 2 a.m., which it could.
Mm. You don't think tennis would let a big match finish at 2 a.m.?
No, but
David?
What I'm saying is, of all matches, if they ended up with that at 2 in the morning.
Well, last year they scheduled it so that the president had to make a phone call to allow it to continue with a crowd.
Oh, God,
I mean...
Well, it was virtually a night session last year.
Yeah.
You know, it was, I think.
Yeah.
And look how that favoured Djokovic, certainly as the match went on as well.
I think they like that slot.
Just one more point on this. Is that another problem with French Open night sessions? Like, how much do the conditions at night vary in New York and in Australia? I suppose they do. I suppose... particularly the heat of the day is a factor in both of those places. But is it much slower at night? Are the balls much heavier? I don't know. That's probably a question for players more than us. But is it a problem that the conditions are so different at night on clay here versus during the day, where you get a match like this?
Yeah, but it's not just a physical comfort thing or a physical fitness thing. It's actually about... Yeah, a very good point. None of us are qualified to say, but I suspect you're onto something there. Just before we get too carried away with totally writing off the challenge of Felix Auger-Aliassime, who will be Nadal's next opponent, he was very good today. But Filip Krajinovic, he could have lost that. I mean, the most tennis I've seen from Felix Auger-Aliassime this tournament was him putting in a bit of a stinker in the opening round, quite frankly. And since then... he has just tightened everything up and gone into professional mode. And he's in good shape going into this fourth round. And, of course, he's got Uncle Tony in his corner. And that is going to be absolutely fascinating.
Yeah. And Rafa was asked about that today as well, wasn't he? And he's just made it clear that there's no problem. But it's a little interesting that, for Tony Nadal, I compared it to sending a player out on loan and then not allowing him to play against you.
Conor Gallagher vibes. I believe Nadal, and I believed Nadal in his press today when he repeatedly said it's not a problem for him. I do wonder if it's not necessarily a problem for Felix, but a factor on his mind. You know, you hire people to be in your corner 100%. They are your people. And
what are you not telling me about what I should be doing to beat this guy?
And look, it's something he absolutely knew about when he signed up to that. But being okay with it in principle, in the big picture, on paper, is very different to in how you feel in the moment.
When it actually comes to pass.
Yeah.
Yeah, and from what Nadal said in his press conference and also from what Felix said in his, I would be a bit surprised if Tony Nadal is in Felix's box. Look, he's not going to be in Nadal's box, that's for sure. But I think he might sit somewhere neutral or watch it on a screen or something. He'd probably be in the stadium. Mm. But I just get the impression he probably won't be in the box.
Do you remember when the brief period when Nadal and Djokovic shared a PR manager?
Oh, yeah.
Benito, who is still Nadal's PR manager. And they played one another and Benito sat in Nadal's box and wasn't Djokovic's PR manager soon after that.
And I feel like on much lower level, but Severin Luti has had that with Federer and Wawrinka over the years, and he's always sat in Federer's box when they've played. Just on Felix, by the way, four slams in a row now where he's reached the second week, starting at Wimbledon last year, right through to US Open, Australia,
yes,
here. And for someone who has these quite dramatic veering from brilliant to lackluster during the season, he's become really consistent at slams.
And that's shown in the fact that he is fourth in the race. And that is something I learned from Rafael Nadal today.
In two languages.
In two different languages. Did you know, David, that the race is El Race in Spanish?
Oh. I didn't.
He was also asked a question in Catalan, and I was really hoping he was going to make it three from three, but my Catalan's not brilliant, and I didn't pick it up.
It's the standard. He's asked about his next opponent. He says, "Great opponent. He's fourth in the race."
Brilliant.
So that's three of the four fourth round meetings from that top half of the draw covered. The other one will be Alexander Zverev against Bernabe Zapata-Miralles, who beat John Isner today. Zverev beat Brandon Nakashima in three sets.
And Zapata-Miralles was a set and a breakdown in qualifying.
Wow.
And has come all the way through.
That's your proverbial playing with house money, isn't it? And there was I didn't see any of them, but I believe there were scenes in his match with John Isner.
Yeah, I saw some of the scenes. John Isner was fighting hard, and I think he went a bit over the edge at one point in one of his celebrations. And he was a bit wild-eyed, I have to say, and the limbs were going everywhere. And oh dear,
relatable anyway, stuff,
yeah,
David.
I can definitely.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
Let's move on to the women's draw now, which... The action started today on the women's side of things in just the most beautiful, incredible fashion. Matt was there for the commencement of Anisimukova, as he called it, and it did not disappoint, did it, Matt? For well, for about 90 minutes. It was an 84-minute first set, I think, and it was everything you wanted it to be.
It was, yeah. I wanted to just live in it. It was...
I mean, you basically were in those press seats.
Yeah, those Longland seats.
Yeah, they are, I think, the best press seats in tennis, and it was fantastic, you know. It felt so consequential, you know, was really the thing. And, you know, I compared it to Dimitrov-Schwartzman was happening over on Simon Mathieu, the other side of the grounds. And look, I'm sure that was, okay, it wasn't a great match, it was a straight sets win, but I'm sure that was fun in itself. But as we've talked about, it doesn't feel that significant for the tournament. You know, the winner plays Novak Djokovic and then Nadal and then, you know, so on. This match in the bottom half of the women's draw genuinely felt like either of these players, if they win it, could go on to reach the final or possibly even win the tournament. You know, it had a big match feel to it, and you could feel that. The players were feeling that. And for most of the set, it was extremely high quality. You had Anisimova hitting her arrow-like shots and Mukova with her sort of soft skills and hand skills and loops and touch. It was a lovely contrast. And then it got to the tiebreak. And bearing in mind, I think both players had set points before the tiebreak, but it got to a tiebreak. And suddenly the tension overtook the quality. And you could feel it and you could see it on particularly Anisimova's face. She was sort of agonizing over it. She had a drive volley on top of the net, which she put wide on set point. And eventually Mukova kind of took the set, stole the set. And it felt so big, as you said, over 80 minutes. I felt like she was then going to probably go on and win the match because, you know, she'd got that first set, which just felt massive. And then it just all came very sadly crashing down. You know, it was genuinely the best set of tennis I'd seen all tournament, I think, followed by a really sad set and a half because Mukova rolled her ankle halfway through the second set, and it was kind of symbolic of her career. You know, she's done this great thing and you're thinking, right, build on it, go and win this match, and she gets injured. And that's what we've experienced with Mukova her whole career. You know, she'll have a great run and then she's injured, and we never really know how good she is. And I felt desperately, desperately sorry for her. She was in tears in the match. She was covering her head with her towel a lot of the times. She played on pretty valiantly, but maybe not smartly.
Possibly too valiantly.
Yeah, she probably played 6 or 7 games there where she was barely moving, and you'd think only potentially worsening the ankle. And when she went a double breakdown in the third set, she called it, and it was just a real shame because it was such a good match before then.
I feel like I don't even know what sort of player she is, really. I know she's got variety. I've heard this, and I've watched enough to gather that. But I feel like after the amount of time she's been on the circuit, you know what a player is. And I don't, the amount of injuries she's had, the stop-start nature of it, I haven't got a handle on her at all.
I feel like I know her game. I really, because her game catches your eye. And when you see it, you pay attention to it. And I feel like she's had quite a few eye-catching wins. You know, Sakkari in the previous round, you had that Muguruza win at the US Open a few years ago, which I think was the first time I really took notice of her. And then, of course, there was that weird Wimbledon where it became apparent that she was friends with Rebel Wilson.
And she beat Ash Barty.
And she beat Ash Barty. Open, so I feel like I know her game. I just don't know how good she can be.
Mm. How does she handle moments?
Yeah, exactly. Stress, that's pressure. I don't know who she is as a person on a tennis court and how far that game can go. And goodness me, that must be so... Well, if it's frustrating for us, it must be damn frustrating.
Because as well, you know, when the fact that she just absorbed Sakkari's game and won, and then she absorbed a set of Anisimova hitting the living daylights out of it, you're thinking, this is a player I want to see ever go against Swiatek.
And she's got an incredible temperament. She remains extremely cool. It's she's got so many attributes, and I'd love to see her go a period of being injury-free and just getting a slice of luck, really, because she deserves it, I think. Anisimova is through. It's a tough one for her to go through that way, because she's, you know, she's just been playing great tennis. Matt, describe her backhand up close for us, because that's what the people come to the podcast for.
I mean, there's no way I can do it justice. It's my favourite backhand, and I look out for backhands. I have a list of backhands I like. Hers is at the top.
Do you? Where's your list?
Is it written?
Handwritten?
Is it laminated?
It's in my head.
Is it like Ross's list in Friends that he's laminated?
Yeah, and then he realises, oh, he's missed one out.
Yeah, I've missed off Isabella Rossellini. Mm.
It's smooth is the word that comes to mind. It is so smooth, and she can hit it down the line with power. She can sometimes just hit a clean return winner off it that just makes you laugh, and she can hit angles off it as well, and it's a beautiful shot.
We're not letting this list thing go, Matt. No, we'll let it go for now, but this will be coming back up again.
Over breakfast, we're having that list.
Yeah.
Okay. And have you noticed when he talks about it, the way his face just, he looks like he's just a little bit drunk?
Yeah.
Well, I might be. We've had a lot of champagne today.
Anisimova now plays Fernandez. Can I have a yes, please?
Oh, yes, please. It's very Gen Z. Bottom half of the draw with Goff and Fernandez and Anisimova.
Yeah, Fernandez beat Belinda Bencic today in a match that I saw quite a lot of in the early stages. But full disclosure, folks, we were recording our first podcast of the day during the latter critical stages of this, and just Fernandez, once she gets her teeth into them, she was down in the first set. I think she lost the second set, but
and was a breakdown in at the start of the third.
She,
I saw
but
as well.
She's such
yeah,
a force.
Well, it's the first time we've been reminded of Flushy Meadows, wasn't it? Because she had a crowd, she had a cause, and she was not letting go. And I missed that because I kind of thought we would see that in Indian Wells, Miami, or something like that. But you know, you've got it laid on here. She's on the big stage.
We saw it a little bit in October, Indian Wells.
Yes,
didn't
we?
We
did. Yeah.
I can't quite remember where she lost out, but she played a couple of night session matches that were electric. But we've not seen it enough since.
That was when Pam Shriver said she was the best show in tennis because it was following on from New
and
York.
She can be. She is a force of nature when she gets going. I love watching her. I went to a press conference. Mary Carrillo went to her press conference as well, and asked her whether she was born a lefty, whether she's naturally lefty, and she sort of casually said, well, actually I was born ambidextrous.
Of course you were.
Both hands and feet.
Amazing.
Absolutely amazing. And then Mary, of course, followed up with she said, was it your choice to be a lefty? And then she said, yeah, but my parents ended up saying, yeah, that was a good choice. Like, yes, that was definitely a good choice, Layla. It was absolutely... absolutely fascinating. And I asked her, sort of apropos of nothing, where I was just sort of quite interested what her relationship with Emma Raducanu is, because those are two people that experienced something completely unique last September, that, okay, it ended differently, but still, one another's experience is probably the closest to shared experience that either of them can claim. And I got the impression that, look, they're not mates or anything, they wouldn't, you know, go shopping together, but she said whenever we see one another we share a big smile and a sort of knowing look, and we really wish one another well, and we hope to be able to play in matches like that again.
I know you don't like boxing, but there's some of that in boxing where people have just shared a horrible experience in many ways, but there's such respect, and there is that knowing look that only you and me know what that was like.
I love that.
Yeah, and this is, I think, only the second time she's made the second week of a slam, and the only other time she went all the way to the final and took everyone with her. And in that bottom half, you know, I don't think she's the favourite to come through it, but there's an opportunity there that we get another, you know, Leila Fernandez experience here.
It was only 3 years ago that she won the junior title here, Fernandez.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know she'd got that pedigree on
2019.
Clay. That's interesting.
Mm. So we have Leila Fernandez against Amanda Anisimova. We have Sloane Stephens in the fourth round.
I'm really pleased about that.
Me too, David.
And me.
Yeah.
And I like Diane Parry, who she beats. You know, she's been a nice... She's been a bit like an Hugo Gaston of 2022, in a way. I've enjoyed watching her. But
isn't Hugo Gaston of
2022?
You know, when he came on the scene and he managed to beat Stan Wawrinka and all the rest of it. But I don't know. I like Sloane. The sport is better when Sloane Stephens is playing lots of it and winning matches, because nobody else does it quite like her.
She was kind of asked, in very polite terms in press afterwards, where's this come from? And she was like, I don't really know. I kind of lost all my matches coming into this tournament. And she basically said, I never know when I'm... She said it in the third person in the way sports people do. She said, you just never know when you're going to hit some form. But I feel like some people do know a little bit more than she does.
Oh,
you know,
absolutely.
It's totally, unpredictable. And I sort of love that, but I also find it fantastically frustrating. But she is, I've found her a joy, really, in press earlier on today. And I haven't always, I've always known that there is so much more there. And we've had Mary to tell us about that on the podcast before, haven't we? I did a podcast with her here, I think, in 2019, where she talked about her experience of Sloane and what
because
she's really like.
Stephens had that injury and had spent a lot of time on
exactly,
Tennis Channel.
Exactly, yeah. But
it
was
company.
That it had coincided with a period where she was pretty frosty with the press. You know, she'd got gun shy with the press, and she's been on a real journey with her relationship with the media. But she was so relaxed and so open today, and it was great. And I'm not going to say anything more about how far she could possibly go, because
ooh, has she got this?
She's a nightmare. She's banana skin predictions town, but it's great to see her playing this way. She's got Jill Teichman next, who it turns out, David, is an absolute sensation.
Such a hit with the fans on Court Simone Mathieu.
Paris loves Jill Teichman.
They love Jill Teichman.
Oh, really?
She's got, they call her Geely.
She had her own singing section.
She had her own choir, David.
She went up to them afterwards and did that thing that Jurgen Klopp does in front of the cop after they've won, lifting their arms in the air.
I got the sense that you had a bit of a shine to her in the Billie Jean King Cup.
She's got a backhand, David.
But she's also a bit feisty and a bit sort of, you know...
She gave me one of my favourite lines ever during the Billie Jean King Cup, when all the aggro was kicking off in the final there. And I asked the Swiss team whether they would talk to the Russian Federation team after the match, because they were concerned about the fact that they'd sort of fiddled the order. And I asked it to Heinz Gunhardt, who was the Swiss captain, but off mic, Jill Teichman went, better not. And I didn't catch it. So I said, sorry, could you say that again, Jill? on mic, please. And I just have ever since, you're right, David, ever since I've really sort of liked Jill Teichman. And I made my way over to Court Simone Mathieu. I got caught up in the Carlos Alcaraz going to practice stampede that was happening between Philippe Chatrier and Simone Mathieu, sort of on my phone walking over there. And suddenly I was like, bloody hell, there's a lot of people here. And next thing I know, a security guard's literally moving me out of the way because I'm about to walk into Carlos Alcaraz. But once I got there, it was at the start of the third set, and it was a really competitive match. You know, Azarenka was, you know, she'd let slip that second set, but she was not going to let it go quite so easily in the third set. She was fighting hard, and Teichman was fighting hard, and it was just a great match. And Catherine joined me eventually with a magnum for the final set tie break.
The ice cream, not the champagne.
The ice cream, that's right. And yeah, it was great. And the main takeaway I had was just how much the crowd were getting behind Jill Teichman. She's got quite a fun brand of tennis. You know, she's a lefty. She hits with a lot of loop sometimes, and then sometimes flattens it out. And
Azarenka served for this match, didn't she?
She did. And that was the thing, you know, a match between Jill Teichman, who is improving and has had some great results over the last year or so. But Victoria Azarenka, you know, Grand Slam champion, and yet it was Teichmann that won the big points in the match. You know, all the big moments, including the final set tiebreak, it was Teichmann that stepped up. And I don't think I would have expected that beforehand.
Do you know, I kind of did, because while that final set was going on, I found myself thinking, obviously we couch everything we say in terms of who we want to win based on predictions, right? I found myself thinking, I think I'd rather have Azarenka win this, because I reckon Coco Gauff's got a better chance of beating her than she has of beating Teichmann.
I agree. I think Teichmann is going to be hard to beat.
Mm.
Mm.
But Coco Gauff beat Kaya Kanepi today, and that takes some doing for...
Anyone who beats Kanepi, well, yeah. I'm convinced. If you're a seed and you beat Kanepi.
Again, this was happening while we were recording with Mary earlier on today, but she went a breakdown in the opening set. It's Kaya Kanepi. You know, Coco Gauff...
And it's early rounds.
This was so losable for Coco Gauff, and I think it could be coming together for her. I do. That makes it sound like it's not been together. She has.
I don't want to say stagnated, but she's sort of leveled.
Mm.
She hasn't taken another jump, has she? And we're waiting for that.
Mm.
This could be it.
Elise Mertens next for Gauff, which, if Gauff plays well, should be winnable, because Elise Mertens, great player, has a ceiling, and Gauff's ceiling is higher. But she needs to turn up. She needs to play. Elise Mertens won't hand her anything. So that's a test.
There have been tournaments over the last year where you could imagine Gauff not winning that match.
Absolutely.
And that's where we need to see the difference.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. The other fourth round that was set up today on the women's side was Martina Trevisan picking up on the form that won her the title in Rabat last week. She's pressed on. She beat Daria Saville today. She now plays Alexandra Sasnovich, who has killed the Kerber dream.
Damn it.
Nothing personal, Alexandra. but she, I mean, she's playing really well,
isn't
she?
She
is.
And it's just, as she should be, she's a great player. I don't know why her ranking isn't... I don't know why she's not higher ranked. I don't know why she's not doing better in the race. But maybe this is the start of something, because she really can play. And that, you know, all due respect to Trevisan, who's such a solid clay court player, and really gets the crowd behind her as well, doesn't she, Trevisan? But that is a big opportunity for Alexandra Sasnovich to take a huge step forward in her career. What is on the agenda for tomorrow in Paris? This is how the order of play is looking on day 7.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Saturday, so it doesn't feel like it should be day 7, so I just wanted to double check. But
it's a bit like those Miami and Indian Wells that run over a week and a half, isn't
it? I'm all at sea. Anyway, we start on Philippe Chatrier with the world number one, Iga Świątek, against Danka Kovanec. How many games is she going to get?
4.
I think 4 is a good call.
She should get a plate for that. I mean, big plate.
I haven't got any other predictions right, so I'll have that one.
Elise Cornet against Zheng Qin Wen. Is Cornet going to set up a Świątek fourth round?
Probably yes. Mm. I think I haven't seen Zheng play enough to know yet what sort of game she's got. But I would just imagine the occasion, and Cornet's going to be doing Cornet things in front of the French crowd, and that's going to be a nightmare to deal with. So I'd say yes.
Then it's Gilles Simon against Marin Cilic. She's got this incredible head-to-head. Simon against Marin Cilic. Gilles Simon could make the second week of
What's
this French
the head-to-head?
Open. 6-1,
is
I think.
6-1 to Simon. The only time Cilic beat him was the 2014 US Open, which he went on to win.
I would never have known that. That's amazing.
Put the retirement ceremony on ice, and under the lights tomorrow night, going up against the Champions League final, which of course is being played in Paris. It is Holger Rune against Hugo Gaston, which could be the match of the day.
Oh, I really want to see that match.
We can double screen.
Over on Suzanne Longner, I think this is, aside from that Runa Gaston match, I think this is the place to be. Irina Camelia Begu against Leolia Zhongzhong, who we learned about on yesterday's pod. Mirmi Ketsmanovic against Daniil Medvedev. First really big test, I think, this
Very
for Medvedev and where he's at on clay. Paola Badosa takes on Veronika Kudermetova.
Very intrigued by that.
And Stefanos Tsitsipas against Mikhail Immer.
Somewhat intrigued by that.
Yannick Sinner's in action on court. Simon Mathieu Sabalenka against Georgie. That could be interesting.
Can we just have a moment for Sabalenka-Georgie? Sure. It's Sabalenka against Georgie. They're just going to be hitting the living daylights out of every attempted shot, no matter how off on it is. I mean, how cool is that?
Yeah. David Goffin against Hubert Hurkacz and Madison Keys against Elena Rybakina.
That'll be good.
Andre Rublev on court 14. He's up against Garin. Jessica Pegula against last year's semi-finalist Tamara Zidanshek. Casper Ruud also on court 14 against Lorenzo Sonego. There's doubles action as well. We'll start covering that in a few days' time. Don't worry. One other thing that we wanted to cover yesterday, actually, but just didn't quite have time. It was the news that was broken in the Times yesterday, the Times in the UK, which is that Wimbledon are removing Miss and Mrs. from their women's honour roll. Obviously, they'll do this going forward, but they're also removing references to Miss and Mrs. backdated for past champions. And obviously, this is a really good thing, but it's 2022 and it's astonishing. It is astonishing that up until now, Chris Evert's 1981 title still appeared as Mrs. J. M. Lloyd. And okay, she took John Lloyd's surname, but it doesn't even have her initials.
It is astonishing to hear that. It really makes you feel queasy to hear that.
Mrs. L.W. King is how Billie Jean King's... Or a couple of Billie Jean King's titles
are listed. I mean, thank goodness they're doing it.
And thank goodness they're doing it. But also, I would just say, and this is... You tune out now if you don't want Catherine on a soapbox, but this isn't just a Wimbledon problem. This is... If you think it's right that this is happening, then just have a think about society and the fact that it is impossible to determine a man's marital status from his title or prefix. And yet a woman, every time you're required to provide a title, you are declaring your marital status. Yes, it is slightly more frequent now that Ms. is an option. And sometimes actually don't fill in forms when Ms. isn't an option, just in objection. But just think about that, the fact that every single time you have to do anything official whatsoever, or even unofficial, sometimes you have to do it at the dry cleaner, or I don't know what it is, inconsequential things, you have to declare your marital status, because that matters to society. And that is, it's horrible. And it is just such a clear illustration of sexism and just such deeply ingrained patriarchy. So I hope this is one of these just headline things that it's not going to change things overnight, but it might just prompt people to think.
Yeah, it's one of those things which it's great that it's happening, but I don't think Wimbledon should be getting a big pat on the back for it. Mm. You know, I was kind of reminded of very recently in US soccer agreed equal pay for the men and women's teams. And that's been something that's been fought by a lot of people, and it's also been something that's been fought against by a lot of people. Anyway, it was a historic thing recently, and Midge Purse, who's a player for the US women's national team, said that she was grateful for the equal pay, thanks everyone who's made it happen, but her dad used to tell her that, you know, you shouldn't reward someone for doing something that they're supposed to do. So she wasn't going to give out any gold stars for it. It should have happened a long time ago, and that's exactly how I feel here about this.
Yeah, absolutely. Hear, hear. That is it for your second Day 6 French Open Tennis podcast. We'll be back with at least one tomorrow.
Normally when we record two Serena Williams has gone out or something, or, you know, Rafa Nadal's lost.
No, we're just celebrating the fact that we remembered to celebrate an anniversary for once. And it's a pretty big one to have remembered. 10 years ago, we started this podcast, and it's hard to believe how far we've come. And that's because of you listening. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of you that are friends of this show that make it possible for us to grow it in the way that we are. We're loving it. We are more committed to this show than we've ever been. And in the words of Billie Jean King, the best is yet to come. We have our French Open mascot, Cooper. Hello, Cooper.
Hello, Cooper.
We have our mascot, Carter, for me. Darwin for David.
Sorry,
Gerald.
Darwin.
Gerald for Matt.
I've heard Darwin's put in for a swap.
Good move, Darwin, I'd say. Billie Jean.
David was tempted to go with Iga Świątek to win tomorrow just to get some points. Seriously? On the board.
I would have got three.
Billie Jean's got Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss. We have our executive producers, Chris Albert-Lee and Kyle Weingartner. And we have birthday shout-outs, Matt.
We do. We have Julian Schumeister in Vienna.
Wow, what a
Hello.
Great name.
Like Julian Beneteau.
Yes, although that's E-N at the end, isn't it?
Oh,
this is A-N.
A-N.
Like Julian Knowles.
Knowles.
Yes.
They've just done a fist bump, folks.
Was he Austrian?
Canadian.
Austrian.
Austrian.
Yeah.
Who was Canadian?
Mark Knowles. No, he was Bahamas.
Someone was Canadian.
Daniel Nesta.
And he played with Mark Knowles.
Yes.
That's...
Yes.
Knowles and Nesta.
We got there in the end.
We got it wrong four times.
Thank you, Julian, for your support.
We also have Ricky Caraviotis from Sydney.
Amazing.
That really is great. I'm not sure there are any tennis Rickies, and I think that's a shame.
Yeah. Can you say the name again?
I might say it differently. Ricky Caraviotis.
Ricky, could you become a tennis player, please? Because that name needs to be on a board.
You've got your Gervais, you've got your Martin. There's no tennis player.
We need Ricky
Caraviotis.
Yes, we do. Ricky, thank you for being our friend. Become a tennis player.
Yeah.
Please.
Thank you, Ricky.
And finally, we have Anne from Basel, who is someone I met today.
Hey!
And honestly, total coincidence.
Right.
Genuinely, I met her today. I went to look at the shout-outs, and she was the next one up.
That's cool.
I promise you, that is what happens.
Only happens on your 10th birthday, that.
Is she the one that came to see you in the Long Len press box?
Yes, she fought off a security guard.
We love that, Anne. Thank you very much. It's also my middle name.
Cheers, Anne.
Cheers, Anne. Thanks for your support. Thanks to all friends of the pod. Thanks to all of our listeners. Here's to the next 10 years. We'll speak to you soon.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.